Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken, episode number 446, recorded March 2nd, 2025.
And today we're doing Star Trek Ongoing, issue number 28, and Star Trek Defiant, issue number 23. So we're getting a little closer to the lore war, but we're not quite there yet on either one.
Indeed. And in the case of the 2022 Ongoing, the universe has been destroyed. And now we're seeing what Sisko might be able to do to save it? Maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so anyway. So I got to say that the two issues are fine. They're fine. But it's not like I was really stoked about these two issues after reading them.
Right. So it's been a while since we read 27, right? And we've read, you know, we got to read those cool Battlestar Galactica issues and stuff like that. But yeah. If I remember right, 27, they were in the empty universe from after hanging out with Chris Mine. Yeah. And they just like, they had enough energy to just like do a straight shot to the celestial temple, the wormhole from the other side of the galaxy, and just like shot themselves there. And then I guess they went straight into the wormhole, and then now we see what happened to Sisko afterwards.
That's my
remembrance
issue.
The same?
Yes.
Well, I'm just really trying to remember what happened in 27. Yeah.
To tee up this.
Yeah. So
it is very, very, very strange. Very strange.
Tis.
It should be interesting to see where this actually goes. I mean, the good thing about doing something so different, I mean, Deep Space Nine in its day was noteworthy because they did break the typical mold of every other Star Trek show that came before it of the time. And this comic book continues to break the mold of, I think, every Star Trek comic book anyway. But as we were speaking just before we started this episode, there's in other comic book worlds, maybe Star Trek is doing something that has been done in other comic book worlds before, and we can discuss that later, perhaps. What do you think?
Sounds good. I look forward to hearing what you're thinking.
Okay. So shall I take care of issue number 28, Donovan?
Yeah, let's do it. Do it.
Okay. Star Trek 2022, issue number 28, titled When the Walls Fell, Part 4. This one is published date January 2025, and the creative team is very familiar. Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing are the writers. Artist, Tess Fowler. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Design and production, Neil Yataki. Group editor, Heather Antos. Editorial assistant is Cassandra Jones. Three covers. Cover A presents Sisko as some kind of god-like being in robes with the light of Jesus showing forth in all directions from his heavenly visage. Bronze Age Bajorans look upon him with some amount of fear. Art is by Roman Rosanas and colors by Lee Lowridge. Cover B features Ben Sisko, older and with a gray beard. He is wearing a red and black, almost uniform kind of thing over his right shoulder. And then over his left shoulder, he's got some kind of tan sash. And then behind him is a lovely wooded waterfalled Bajor, I guess. Art is by Tess Fowler. The retailer incentive cover presents the Theseus Bridge crew on the bridge, with Captain Sisko in the center, seated at the con. There is a space background and three sort of beams of light cutting across the cover diagonally. There's a shape in the right half of the cover that makes it look like it's part of a larger montage picture, maybe? I don't quite know. Art is by Jake Bartok. Five moons look down on New Bajor. Dr. Crusher is torn to bits painfully. New Bajor is teeming with life and natural beauty. Jake Sistko is grabbing his head as he and his family is painfully torn asunder. New Bajor is full of possibilities. Sato and Talir are in agony as they are unmade. Sistko has all this and more in his head as he is kneeling in Bajoran grass, screaming with a baseball innocently waiting for him. This place was made for him. The Sistko picks up the ball and tries to deal with his loss before he can think about what comes next. Four young men hold their sword tips pointing at the Sistko, ready to strike down the stranger. A fifth person with a Robin Hood green look to him, named Kai Athan, steps forward, getting the others to back off. Kai makes a friend of the Sistko, and they walk off together towards a rustic village. The people of the village look at the queer-looking Sistko, who they come to accept in time. After all, if Kai does, he can't be all that bad. As the days go by, Sistko acclimates to the place, but cannot stop thinking about Jake and the others' painful deaths as they were unmade. Sistko promises to find a way back to them, but he has no idea how. As the years unfold, Sistko makes many friends and shares many stories of his past. He expands their horizons with so many possibilities. He shares recipes with the people of the village. And as they grow old, the Sistko does not. Word spreads of the Sistko, and for some, they react with fear. A brutish group from a neighboring village comes to see the Sistko. They want to destroy him. Sistko takes a blow from a rough club to the side of his head. He responds with firm resolve and for the first time shares the power of the orb of the prophet and the adversary lore with the large warrior woman who attacked him. She cried and did not fully understand what she saw. The Sistko won her and the others over. Time continued to pass, and the village grew into a city. The Sistko taught them how to make buildings large and strong from the foundations up. After a century with the people of the city, he withdrew and spent time alone in a cave. A man comes to see Sistko and returns his queer orb of white leather and red lace. They speak of the good times and the more recent bad times. The Pah Wraiths come upon the city people and wrought death and destruction. The Sistko was able to face the Pah Wraith and win it over also. Sistko says the world is a forge, a place to build what lore cannot stop. Sistko returns to the people and is a leader to them. In time, his looks change and he obtains a cooler set of threads. His right eye goes aquamarine and says it's time for him to come knocking on his mother's door. He is a builder and it would be celestial. To be continued.
So he creates the wormhole. That's what we're learning.
I guess. So this is in the past. So this is in the Alpha Quadrant, in the past, and they've done some timey-wimey stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, this is real Bajor. You kept calling it New Bajor, but I'm pretty sure this is supposed to be the real Bajor in the past, and basically Sistko has created their whole religion around him. So for him to always be like, I'm just a man, I'm not a god or whatever, and then he goes back in time and he's like basically spouting off all the stuff that all the old Bajorans used to believe in. So, yeah, to me, he just basically created the whole Bajoran religion. You know, it's the one that possible. He learned, but still, yeah. It seems like he created it. But you're thinking that it's a different Bajor. Because you kept calling it New Bajor, but that's not in the dialogue anywhere.
Yes, I did. Because another thing it could be, it could possibly be not timey-wimey at all, but this is a recreation either by Sisko somehow or more like the prophets, the wormhole aliens.
Right.
So this is a post-purge that Lore did. Right. And this is a new Bajor somewhere in a pocket universe. I don't know exactly. But I admit it could be a timey-wimey thing because we do know that the wormhole aliens, the prophets, see all time at the same time, right? Simultaneously.
Right.
So the idea of linear time is really not a thing for them. I think they understand it, but they don't experience time that way.
Right. And if you remember when they were in Pleroma or whatever, and his mom showed up and he was like asking her to help. And she said that she wouldn't because he's already decided, you know, basically she kept saying that you've already decided what we're going to do. And he was like, I haven't decided anything. So now we know that because of this whole timey wimey thing, whatever he's about to do to knock on the door or whatever is the decision that she was talking about in the future.
Wow. That is a big assumption. Wow.
I don't think it's an assumption. I think it's pretty clear. That's where they're going.
Okay. Maybe you're right. I do not see that at all. I mean, maybe. Huh. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I thought the decision they were talking about then is that was happening then when Sisko was not going with her back to Prophet Land. That's the decision I thought she was talking about.
Yeah, well, she kept saying, you've already decided. And he's like, no, I haven't. And then she would, you know, do her mumbo jumbo prophet speak. So I'm thinking that this is finally the answer to that question. So we'll now know what it was that he decided in the past. And it seems like he's, you know, like I said, it seems like he's creating the whole religion by regurgitating what he's already learned. So then it kind of makes it self-prophesizing, you know, where he already knows what they believe in the past or in the future. So he's telling them in the past what to believe in the future. So it's kind of, I don't know, it's a little weird.
Okay. I don't get that from this book.
Really?
But cool. I mean, Sisko is Sisko. And he's been plunked down in this Bajor, whether new or old, he's in the past, whatever. But he's been plunked down here and he can't go anywhere else. So he's kind of like Picard in The Inner Light, where he's plunked into an alien world he can't do anything about getting out of, supposedly. Well, at least it doesn't seem like he can. So he is adapting to being here. But because he's half wormhole alien, he doesn't seem to age. He seems to age very slowly, if indeed he's aging. And apparently he does have powers, especially when that Xena warrior princess was going to bring that club down on him. And she did bring it down, but then I guess he wasn't, he moved himself because he was on the ground about to get smashed. And she did the swing, but then the next panel, Sisko was on his feet and he's like, you know, a yard or two away from her.
Right. Looks like he's wearing pajamas. Yeah. But yeah, no. Yeah. And then he grabs
powers.
Her paw.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Then he grabs her by the back of the head and he shows her. Well, whatever. Oh, well, you only see his thumb on her ear. You don't know where the rest of his hand is. Yeah,
but you know that's how those religious folks on Bajor do it.
Okay, whatever.
They're grabbing their ear to feel the paw.
And then he's like sharing with her visions of destruction and Lore's face and blah blah blah. So he's got powers.
Mm-hmm.
And is he purposely trying to bring religion to them?
I don't know if he's purposely doing it, but he is doing it.
Well, yeah. Anyway,
I guess because he knows it's true.
If this is truly in the past, then why is he even talking about, you know, some kind of protection from lore? I mean, I'm sure lore can jump and can jump back in time too.
Hundreds of years. He just wants somebody to talk to. Yeah, I don't know.
I will gladly say that I do not understand 100% what's going on here. I do not understand where it's going. The universe is gone, or at least definitely our reality, our dimension is gone, supposedly. From the pictures they showed or the drawings in this book, it looks like everybody he knows is quite dead. So are they going to, I mean, if this is back in time, then okay, he's back in time. That doesn't really settle anything as far as what's happening post-lore, destroying right. everything.
Yeah, and they even mentioned that everything in the universe was gone, the past and the future. Not just, you know, it wasn't just a current thing. It was like he wiped it all out. So how there could be an old Bajor, I don't know. Doesn't make sense. Unless this is the pocket dimension. I mean, that gives credence to your pocket dimension idea. But I still don't think that's where they're going with it.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so like I said before we did the synopsis, this is... I've never seen stories like this in the world of Star Trek before, except a little bit for the Inner Light comparison, but that's a loose comparison. But Marvel and DC in their universes, they have rebooted their entire universes. So they had multiverse sagas and then just recreated the universe somehow. And then the comic books could carry on from that recreated universe. So is that what they're trying to do here? Because if that's not what they're trying to do, then this is very creative. I just don't know that I'm that entertained yet.
Not that entertained.
I mean, come on. I don't know. I mean, well, we all know what Star Trek stories tend to be like. This is not like any of those.
Right. Nope, I'm with you.
Which is fine. Yeah. It's good to be creative.
It's definitely different. And I mean, even the way this story is written, where again, it's written as if we're reading the Bajoran Bible and you know, like all, I mean, most of what goes on in this book is just dialogue boxes, right? Not dialogue boxes, but just captions. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's all written as if it's from some text or something that somebody's reading.
Exactly.
As if it's reading from the Bible. And then we kind of see the dialogue and the action of what they're reading in their Bible. But yeah, so I mean, that's definitely different.
Yeah. In the beginning of the book, it says things like it's in on parchment or something, or, you know, it is said that when Bajor was new, her five moons looked down at her in awe. And it's like, yeah, so that's examples of what you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, which is most of the book.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and then as far as like Sisko's visions of everybody kind of melting and stuff, which look cool, but I mean, some of them are crew from the Theseus, but then some are people that weren't there. Yeah. So it's not like these events are real, right? Because
well, how do you
Theseus
know that?
Theseus went through the Theseus went through the wormhole, including him.
Yeah.
So he's either, if it was real, then you would only see the Theseus people, I think. But because we see Jake and we see the baby and we see Worf and stuff, then that makes me think that this is just his like worst case scenario of him imagining what happened to everybody when they were wiped out of existence.
That's interesting. I think at the very least, Jake and the rest of the people on DS9 and Bajor and Worf, they were wiped out.
Right.
You know, there's no two ways about that. The whole universe was wiped out. The Milky Way, everything wiped out. So they're gone. So they're dead. That's it, I think. Now, as far as the crew of the Theseus, the ship went into the wormhole and everybody was fine. And then they went into the wormhole. So unless the wormhole became unmade, they shouldn't have been made unmade. So I'll agree with that possibility. But they show it very clearly. Dr. Crusher and Dorian Sato girl. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Scotty, later they show Scotty.
Right.
Which is like, oh, no, not Scotty. Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
So, yeah. So that's why I think it's more of just that's his envisioning of how they all got wiped out. And he somehow just traveled back in time.
Okay. Well. That's cool. And I think they were all wiped out. And he traveled back in time, or he's in some Bajor construction of the prophet's creation. And they plunked the Cisco on it. So I'm not sure which way it is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which way it is. I don't know. Anyway, it's interesting. I mean, it's generating conversation, right? I mean, it isn't just another normal. Oh, the Enterprise crew beams down to a new planet and it's a parallel development thing and, you know, whatever. It's different.
Definitely different.
Yep, yep. So speaking of different, so towards the end of the book, things have progressed on Bajor and they show a panel that shows this big, huge statue of Sisko holding a baseball. And he's kind of like squatting down or maybe seated on the ground. I'm not quite sure. And then there's a person across from him who I think he's embracing. It looks like a big woman.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's that one that was trying to club him.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, showing how he brought the peace to the barbarian women.
Okay, the barbarian women. Yeah, she's got the red hair. So I was going with either Red Sonja or Xena, but I decided to go with Xena in the synopsis.
And I was going with, like, is that supposed to be like Kira Nerys's like ancestor or something? Because she kind of looks a little bit like Kira.
A little bit.
But I mean, that's really far back in the gene pool.
Yeah.
If it's okay. A time travel thing.
Okay, yeah. So I wasn't sure whether that was supposed to symbolize all of Bajor, the people of Bajor, but I think you're right. I mean, the hair is not the same, but it's kind of reminiscent. I mean, it looks like she's got a mohawk in the statue, where she didn't have a mohawk in reality, but, you know.
Nah, she just had shaved sides and a...
There you go. There you go.
Flat top type thing.
Yeah, not really so that top, was but. Interesting. Really big, tall statue thingy.
Yeah, and they look like they're almost like lovers or whatever. Because at first I thought it was like, oh, this is like a statue of lovers. And then I saw the baseball and I'm like, oh, man, that's supposed to be Sisko.
I knew it was Sisko.
Yeah.
I just didn't know who the other person was. But now that you mention it. And then really, I guess the only other thing I have to say, I don't really have that much to say. Although I guess I have said a lot, but whatever. I thought in the last panel where it's showing Sisko, like, different. Like, he's got the gray, not the beard, but the, what, a goatee? Is it a goatee? Whatever. He doesn't have hair on the sides of the face. It's just on his mustache and then on his chin, that kind of thing. And he's got a soul patch. but, like, the one eye. So the one eye being all blue with, like, a white pupil and then kind of some vertical white line. Is that supposed to represent his prophet half, his wormhole alien half?
His demigod half? Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. But it looks like he's changed and it looks like over time he's gotten the wherewithal to actually do something. You know? go and talk to mom.
Right.
Do something.
So did he always shave his head because he liked the style or because he was going bald in the show?
Oh, Avery Brooks?
Yeah.
Well, he had a, in season one, he had a full head of hair.
Right.
I mean, it was cut short, but he had hair. It looked like his hairline was fine.
Right. Yeah, I just thought it was odd that he grows the dreadlocks and stuff out in this one. And he looks like he looks like the wizard from Shazam, the Shazam movie.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right.
That's all I could see when I was reading this. I was like, oh, man, they're really leaning into what the wizard looked like. And then all of a sudden he shaves it all off and he's back to goatee, but a gray goatee, Cisco, at the end.
Right. Yeah, people go into different styles over time.
I like the long hair look. I think that looked good.
I think it suited him.
The wild wizard prophet look.
Right. But, people change over time. And then so when he's dealing with the Wraith, the Power Wraith, and he cuts his hand and stuff, it's like, what? Okay, so they added the Power Wraiths in there. So it's like, okay, they're bringing the Power Wraiths in there. They referred to them in the TV show. I just found it kind of out of the blue.
Oh, really?
Why did they add them in there?
Because the religion needs it. Because we know they believe it in the future.
So he's going to be the devil.
They got to explain
it in the
past. So the
Power Wraith's the devil. Right. Oh, you're telling me that Cisco created the Power Wraiths?
Well, no, I'm just saying he had he didn't create them, but he basically had to be involved in their being so that they could believe it in the future. I don't know.
Okay, so the Power Wraith, it seemed like Cisco was dealing with it as almost a contemporary. You know, we're both trapped here. You know.
Yeah.
Trying to come to a peaceful resolution, an agreement, something, and apparently he is successful in that. So did they become blood brothers? We just missed the part where they shook hands, or what?
I don't know. When I was first thumbing through the book and I saw that scene where he cut his hand and has his arm outstretched, I was like, oh my god, he has the stigmata. They're gonna really go there with bringing in the allegory of Cisco Jesus. But then when I read it, I was like, okay, it's not quite that, but
it's not quite Cisco Jesus.
It pretty much is, though.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Which we always knew, you know, with the whole prophet thing, but it was just weird reading this and him in the robes and teaching people and all that stuff. It's just like, this is weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. Okay. Okay, that's all I have to say. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes.
Yeah, me too. One of the things I wanted to say was that the baseball, I don't think it would survive thousands of years. I mean, it is just leather and thread.
Okay.
So
that's the only thing you were having a problem with.
No. It was just one of the things that I have a problem with.
Okay, okay.
That ball would have deteriorated over the years.
Yeah, I agree. But it is Cisco's talisman.
Right.
So it seems to be, he sure does hold on to it a long time.
Right. Well, what did you think of the art overall? Did you like it?
It's okay. It's fine. I mean, it could be better, but it's fine. It's not overly realistic, but it's not horribly unrealistic. It's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Well, I've kind of like looked at the next issue and they go for a drastically different art style in the next issue.
Hmm.
So that'll be interesting to read.
Okay. I haven't gone to the next one yet.
Yeah. So, all right. That's, I guess, my last thing. Just answer. It asks more questions than it answers. And I really just like, you know, if it is the past, he's really just like given up on the Prime Directive because he basically is creating a religion.
Good point.
And he's not creating
point,
it as...
At this point, I would not be that worried about a Starfleet Federation rule.
Right, since there is no Federation or universe.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right, you ready to go on to Defiant?
I am.
All right, so this is issue number 23. It had a release date of January of 2025. The writer was Christopher Cantwell, artist by Angel Unzeta, colorist by Marissa Louise, letterer Clayton Cowles, design and production Neil Yutaki, group editor Heather Antos, editorial assist by Cassandra Jones. And in the back of the book, we got three covers. Cover A is by Angel Unzeta, and it shows Martok about to swing down a batleth on Alexander. And it looks like they're, like, in the pyramids. I mean, that's the color scheme they're going for, where it looks like they're in a desert or whatever, but you can't really make out what's behind them. But I was definitely getting a pyramids vibe when I first looked at it. Cover B is by Adam Gorham, and it shows Alexander holding a batleth in the foreground, and then in the background, we see a giant face of a screaming Klingon. It's not Martok, because he has his right eye, but maybe it's supposed to be Kalis, I don't know. And then we have a retail incentive cover by Takashi Akazaki, and it's like a black and white manga cover. Again, it shows Martok in the bottom right-hand corner, and then this time we see Alexander pouncing on him, holding some knives. So, story starts off with a flashback. We see toddler Alexander, like when we first met him when he moved in with Worf on the Enterprise. He is being chased by a Targ, and then he's being chased by a tiger, and then a Mugatu. Worf then shows up and kind of saves him, and we learn that this is a whole holodeck program. Worf created it for his son when the boy asked to visit a zoo. Worf tells him that they must assume that everything is out to get them. Come back to the present, Worf is preparing Alexander for his next quest. This is called the Errand of Valor. He is going to go down to a contested planet between the Federation and Klingon Empire that is being overrun by a corrupt corporation. The workers are being worked to the bone as virtual slaves. Worf stresses to Alexander that he's going to have to do this all on his own. So Alexander then sneaks into the prison where there is a few brave workers that had spoken out against the corporation, and they're waiting to be shipped off for execution. Meanwhile, in the distant Gamma Quadrant, the Defiant is being attacked by a Cardassian ship. And this is, they're in the Gamma Quadrant trying to knock out some minefield that's been sitting there since the Dominion War. There's also a Section 31 ship there, and it had caused the Defiant's shields to go down, so they're basically defenseless. A Cardassian beams over to the Defiant and tries to take over the ship with using Miles as a hostage. When that fails, he beams back to his ship, and then they prepare to fire on the Defiant. Back with Alexander, he's there with the prisoners, and he's surprised to find Martok there. Martok tells him to go back to the ship and call off this mission because if they disrupt this corporation, then it'll cause some tensions between the Federation and the Klingon Empire. Alexander refuses, and then they have a fight. And then after they're fighting for a while, Worf shows up, and Alexander learns that this was all a test to see how committed he was to his new cause. The trio now board the transport with the other prisoners, but then they overpower the guards and commandeer the ship. They make their way to the corporate leader. Alexander then threatens the leader with a batleth that he needs to share the profits with the people, and that if he doesn't, he's going to come back and chop off his head. The man agrees, and Alexander leaves with his mission complete. En route to his next trial, Worf tells his son that the next test is called the Errand of Vengeance. He will be required to kill someone who has escaped justice. Alexander does not want to kill again, but Worf insists that he must in order to regain his honor. And then he says the target of this vengeance will be none other than Kalus II himself. To be continued.
I definitely saw that as soon as he said somebody that escaped justice or whatever. Right away, right. I was saying, oh, he's gonna have him killed, Kalus. Which would make so much sense.
Yeah, it's a pretty big target, though. I mean, Martok got his butt whooped by him, and now we're going to just send little Alexander?
Well, we'll see what happens. But, yeah. I mean, they just sent little Alexander down to this planet. Now, okay, so the fact that on the first trial, Worf was able to get, like, some cousins or something.
His aunt and, like, some... Yeah, honorary uncle or whatever the hell he was.
He's something. Yeah. So he was able to get some family to help with that. And now he's got Martok to help out with this one. It's like, oh my God. Worf is calling in all the markers on this stuff.
Right.
So I was surprised. I was surprised that Martok was on there, of course, although we did see him like on the covers and things.
Right.
But
yeah, talk about spoilers.
Yeah. We knew he was coming, but still, it was still a little surprising that he was like one of the prisoners. And it's like, aren't you the chancellor of the whole Klingon Empire? What are you doing here?
Don't you have more important things to do than hang out?
Yeah, exactly. And take the risk. You're supposed whatever. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Nobody recognizes him. Yeah. He gets there. He intermingles with the prisoners
Other
and nobody notices him.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of distinctive with that eye and stuff.
Right.
But, and I think he looked really good in this issue.
Good I remember Martok you thought he
as
was
being a little older. Huh?
Yeah. No, I was just wanting to see what you meant by good. Good as in that he looked like the actor or good as in.
Good as in he looks very trim and fit, like he is like in his prime, like he's in his 30s or something. And although Martok might not be like, quote, in his 60s or 70s, I think he was supposed to be a little older. So they're definitely, I think he's definitely been de-aged in this issue.
Right.
And he, especially on the cover, I mean, look at him on the cover. I mean, he looks fit. I mean, he looks like Worf fit in the, in TNG days, on the TV show.
Yeah. Well, maybe after almost dying in the Day of Blood, he's really hit the workout.
Hit the gym.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And that's why nobody notices him. It's like, you know what? You kind of look like a really young Martok. Has anybody ever told you that before?
Yeah, maybe. But like a lot of the comic books, they're de-aging all kinds of people. I mean, remember that Battlestar Galactica thing? Only the last issues. It's like, oh my God, the way they were drawing President Rosalyn. It's like, oh my God, that's ridiculous. She looked nothing like that. Anyway, whatever. It's not unusual. People get de-aged all the time, I suppose.
It is a comic book. Everybody's supposed to be the peak performance.
I guess so. I just
muscles popping everywhere.
Yeah.
Booties glistening in the light.
Yes, yes. Lots of glinting off the armor. So you want to know my favorite part of this book? The Mugatu. That was great. They somehow fit a Mugatu in here. That's great. And he looks really good. I think the drawing of the Mugatu is great.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was weird that, he's being chased by a Targ, okay. And then like an Earth Lion or an Earth Tiger, and I'm like, well, that's weird. And then a Mugatu, and I was just like, all right, this is just all over the place.
Yeah, but a Mugatu, man.
Yeah, you don't see him enough.
No, you don't see him. No, you don't see him nearly enough. And then I immediately couldn't help but think of Will Ferrell's Mugatu. In Zoolander. Mm-hmm. And it's like I immediately had to get I immediately searched a picture of Mugatu in Will Ferrell Mugatu, and it's like I'm just looking at these photo stills especially him holding his little white dog that has the exact same hairstyle as he does. And he's got Mugatu in big letters on his shirt. Oh, my God, that's funny. Ben Stiller is such a fan. I mean, how many people are going to get that? Not many.
Right, not many.
Yeah, anyway.
Oh, then in Cable Guy, they do the whole reenactment of
I love that. I love that.
Yeah,
well, if they ever do a live-action comedy of Star Trek, which they have been talking about, I mean, supposedly one was in development. It's like they should definitely get Ben Stiller involved somehow.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
All right, so what did you think about the whole ritual? So he stresses that you're going to have to go down here by yourself, free all the workers that are being worked to death, and you're going to have to be by yourself. I'm not going to be there. And then as soon as he gets down there, Martok's there. And you're like, well, that's weird. And then Worf shows up, and then they're like, let's do this together. And then they end up doing it all together anyways. It's like,
well, it was a test of courage. So. Yeah. I mean, of course, Worf is lying to him constantly. Well, Dad, you keep lying to me, don't you? Okay, fine, whatever. What do you think about the artwork?
I liked it for the most part.
I think it's quite clean, accurate. Sure, they may de-age some people, but that's fine. The drawings of Alexander are great.
Right.
And the
action's good. I like the like that one page spread with where they're fighting with the chains and stuff against all the guards. I thought
that
right.
was great. Yep. But I gotta question the decision where Alexander's on the Klingon ship and then Worf is saying the repeated shunnings by your peers, and they show Alexander with some kind of weird, what is he singing? Is he doing a rap? What's going on?
He's just being a little goofball.
Oh my God. He looks, it's very odd.
It is odd.
And it's like, I question that choice. We saw what TNG, we saw the episode where he's on, you know, in the Klingon outfit on a ship and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was Deep Space Nine. And he was
Deep Space Nine? Okay, fine.
Yeah, and he was kind of being a little bit of a class clown kind of thing to get laughs. So, I mean, it fits. But yeah, no, the picture is funny.
It's a very odd picture.
Yeah.
The look on his face, I mean, I don't know. Looks very odd.
It does.
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Am I funny? No, you're not funny.
Well, what'd you think of the corporate leader guy who has the robot arm? Do you think they modeled him off of anybody? Because to me, he really looks like a certain actor.
Well, he looked like Spiner. It's like
Spiner. Who's Spiner?
Brent.
Oh.
Data.
Yeah, in that first panel, yeah, he did kind of look like him.
I thought he was related to, you know, some kind of tie into lore or something. Okay, who do you think he looks like?
I think he looks just like Christopher Eccleston.
Okay. Let me go back and get a good
face.
The
Ninth Doctor.
Yeah.
I've been watching. We watched. He was in a movie last year. The Young Woman in the Sea, where it was that woman who first swam the English Channel, and he's in it, and he's kind of a bad guy coach. And man, when I was reading this, I was just like, dude, that looks just like he. It looks like he does now, not like what he looked like back in Doctor Who days, but this looks like him now.
Oh,
well, especially when he's like reading the report and all mad and stuff and throwing it and stuff.
Right.
Really looks like him.
Maybe they did that, or maybe Thor's black elves or whatever those were.
Yep, that one too.
Oh, same guy. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's Christopher. Were you being funny?
Yeah, I was trying to be fun.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought you were, but then I was like, well, maybe he really didn't know.
I knew.
Oh, you knew.
Oh, I knew. Another example of badly scripted villain, Marvel villain.
Right.
I just, I was not impressed.
Yeah, I like him, but I didn't.
He's such a good actor, but yeah, they didn't give him shit. Anyway, so I liked how, another thing that kind of I was questioning is when Alexander turns into Spider-Man. Crawling up that wall with, like, no ropes. and you can, I mean, if you look really hard, maybe his upper, his right hand is on a lip. But not, I don't know. You really have to look hard for that. I mean, right. It looks like his hands are right against a vertical, almost vertical cement wall.
Yep.
And he's just... He's Tobey Maguire moving up the wall.
That's just his parkour.
Maybe he had a really long run, and he jumped up on the wall, and he was able to use his momentum. I don't know. Yep. It just looks like Spider-Man to me. Okay, so.
So, what do you think about the Defiant stuff? Because I thought that was. Just filler in the middle of the book. Just a couple of pages of the guy beamed over, tried to use Miles as a hostage, and then oops, and then beams away. It's just like that was pointless.
It probably that B storyline could have not had that at all, and it really would not affect the story.
Right. Yeah.
So literally two pages. That is the captain. Right.
Go ahead.
So that is the captain of the Cardassian ship? They're insinuating that.
They kind of look alike.
But they all look alike, the spoonheads. But I think that's actually the captain. I mean, why would... Well, maybe I'm wrong. But it seems like he's the captain. But why is he... Why would the captain do that?
Right.
I mean, they're not like Klingons. I mean, the Klingons, sure. And Klingons will do wacky doodle things like sending the chancellor of your entire empire... on this weird mission for one kid,
right.
Kid's honor. Anyway, but you know, it's funny because the way they're drawing the Cardassian here, and he's on the ship. I mean, he's like he looks like a vampire or something. Like, get the mouth open like he's hissing at people.
Yeah, especially stuff. when he's being beamed away, he really looks like
exactly. Yep.
Like a vampire that's had the drapes open and the lights coming in.
Exactly. There you go.
But what do you think about Miles getting punched? That's a pretty funny shot. Poor Miles.
That was funny.
And then Rose just kind of like smirking and like, hey, they trained their knuckles on corpse bones, whatever that means.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe just getting across the point that... that they start training them early to be soldiers. I don't know. But.
Yeah.
So Miles is able to jujitsu him out of the hold and flip him over. And he thinks, really good, man. And then he gets the whole punch in the jaw.
Yeah.
That is, don't think too much of yourself, Miles.
Yeah. So maybe the Cardassian's he's the only Cardassian on that ship. I mean, if it is the captain,
Wasn't it a big ship? I mean, it didn't seem like it was a small one.
But he's also kind of by himself on this.
Is he?
Mine. I mean, no. I'm just saying the ship is not. It's not going back and forth through the wormhole because he's kind of been just hanging out there since the Dominion War. So maybe that's what they're saying. I don't know. I didn't think that he was the captain until you said it. But I'm just trying to. Think it through. If he was the captain, maybe that's why he did it. And that's why he wanted to try to take over the Defiant. Otherwise, why would he have beamed over? And why is the Section 31 ship just kind of hanging out?
Yeah, and so the Cardassians can... So they're not cloaked, right? The Section 31.
No, right. Just looks like they're just hanging out there.
Well, and supposedly at this point, we're supposed to, you know, maybe we're not allies, but, you know, pretty close with the Cardassians. I mean, we're helping them out a lot with their post-purge Dominion War thing. So why are they so, I mean, I could see them say, hey, what the heck are you doing here? but I can't see them trying to infiltrate the ship and take it over, unless that's a way for them to resolve the situation without blowing up a Federation ship. I don't know. Yeah. But it seems like there's unnecessary conflict here. If the Cardassians and the Federation are supposed to, you know, be on at least not warrior terms.
Right. And we saw in that trial of Sisko that, you know, the Cardassians are just being held together by, you know, just duct tape, right? I mean, the whole civilization is just barely being held together. Yeah. So I find it hard to believe that they have enough resources to keep supporting the war effort in the Gamma Quadrant. So I don't know.
Wait a minute. They're in the Gamma Quadrant? I thought they're in the Alpha Quadrant.
No, they took the wormhole to get here. In the last issue, they had to take the wormhole to get over here. Because remember that...
I thought these were the self-replicate... I thought the Cardassians were using the self-replicating minds. Right. Okay, so they're all in the Gamma Quadrant. Okay, I didn't get that. I didn't remember that. Okay.
Pretty sure. Yeah, 90% sure that's what's going on.
Okay, that's fine. But wherever they are, I mean, wasn't it a Galor class ship? I mean, it seemed like a big ship.
Right, it is.
So I don't know that they can fully automate a ship like that, but with one person, but I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, well, like I said, I didn't think that until you mentioned that it looked like the captain. So I don't think that's the case, but.
Yeah, and it might not be.
Stranger things have happened.
Well, but look at that one page where Julian is holding the disruptor on him. And the vampire Cardassian begins saying, "Very well, if I can't seize control of your bridge myself, ...
Right, and then he finishes the time, words. Yeah.
Then he finishes the sentence.
Mm-hmm. On the communicator from the bridge.
Right, so now he's back on his ship. And now he finishes his sentence. So.
Yep, seems you're right.
Unusual that you would have your captain do that. And I'm reasonably certain there's more than just one person on that ship. I mean, if there was one person on that ship, that would even be stupider for him to beam over and leave the ship empty. But I don't know. Brace for impact.
Yeah. And how did, I mean, so is he working with the Section 31 to bring the shields down? I mean, he sees maybe that there's two Federation ships there, so why does he think that he can take over the Defiant? It's not like he has the upper hand anywhere.
Well, I think it's very possible that the Section 31 folks want to let the Cardassians use those self-replicating minds for some reason. I don't know what the reason is.
Mm.
Trying to maintain good relations. Maybe there's some kind of reason why those self-replicating minds do have to be there, even though it's killing Cardassians. Or somebody's killing somebody. I think it's Cardassians.
Whoever lives on this planet.
But exactly. So there's probably some bigger picture thing that maybe the Federation is better off if the Cardassians left those minds where they were. Even though it's from a humanitarian standpoint, and if you go by the values of the Federation, they should not be allowing that to happen, but they're doing it anyway because they are Section 31.
That is a very Section 31 thing to do.
Yeah. So don't know.
Well, that's an interesting take.
Yeah.
I hope you're right because I like that.
Yeah. Boy, I wish I had more to say, but I don't.
I really don't either. I, to be honest, I didn't like either one of these books.
They were
blown away with
them. No, I was not blown away with either one. And it's just more the same. Well, as far as the continuing trials of Alexander, it's just more the same.
Right.
So, Worf and relatives help Alexander out in his trials. And I really hope the next one's the last one. It seems like it has to be, right? The biggest challenge of all is taking out Kalis, the Kalis clone. So this probably should be the last one.
Oh, I doubt it.
Nah.
I mean, what number is this one? This one is number
Is this the
two.
Third one? It's the third one, is it?
No, it's number two.
The one in this book is two, but the next one's going to be the third one. And things tend to come in threes.
Nah, they stretch these out to be at least five or six. Got to have enough to put them in the trade.
Okay, maybe. Okay. Well, it's like all those things they did in the Captain Pike race thing, where the Enterprise was going through that race and they kept on going through different. There you go, Scorpion Run, Scorpius Run, whatever. And like they could have stopped. I mean, they were going through. They went on too long with that. and they had at least four things like that.
Right.
Different legs of the race.
Right. Yeah, I think that was a six parter. Five or six issues. That seems to be about the norm.
Okay, well. I'm hoping the Kalis one is the big grand finale. So we can move off of that and see what's going on. You know, ultimately, what's the new situation for the Defiant crew?
Well, it'll be the
They're in transition now.
Yeah, so the Lore War issue number one comes out April 2nd. So at the time of recording, we're about a month out. So that means that...
So the next issue. Or the next issue of 2002, anyway.
No, because next...
Or 2022.
No. I don't know.
Well, okay.
So number
so the Lore War is a standalone issue?
Well, it'll start off. It'll be like the
like
Day of Blood,
and...
where it'll be like a like number one to start it all off. Yeah.
Okay.
So we got 29 of Star Trek 22 is already out, and and it's out, and then there'll be a 30, which will come out in March. Mm-hmm. So then, 31 should be part of the Lore War. And then 26 of Defiant should be part of the Lore War. So, yeah, I guess maybe we got two more Defiants before it'll tie into the Lore War.
Okay. Well, we'll see how long we drag these things out.
Yeah. Well,
I don't necessarily want to have the Alexander thing drug out much longer, and I don't necessarily want the whole Cisco Bajoran Jesus thing dragged out too much longer.
Right. So saying that, we're at a crossroads here in the show. Next episode, do we read Lower Decks, because we do have Lower Decks 3 and 4 to read, or do we read Star Trek 29 and Defiant 24? I'll let it be up to you, Ken. Which one do you want to do?
I would rather... You know how huge a fan I am of Lower Decks, so I would prefer to go for 2022 and Defiant.
All right.
We'll read you then.
Then that's what we will do.
Okay. So you heard it here first, folks. Next episode, we're continuing with The Defiant and 2022 ongoing stories. Yay.
Right. And then we will have to decide how we're going to do. I kind of like how we're doing the two ongoing together each episode, one a month.
Agreed.
But once we get into Lore War, it's probably going to throw that off for a bit. So unless there's another one-off or something, then we're going to be a little off schedule.
Okay. Well, we'll make adjustments as we need.
We'll figure it out. We got a month to figure it out.
There you go.
Okay. All right. So next episode, we're doing 29 and 24.
Yes. Excellent. Let's see where things go.
Okay.
Thanks everybody for joining us on the review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes, or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, Second Name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.